Case number 20-1156, Public Citizen, Inc. versus the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Mr. Nelson for petitioner, Ms. Perry for respondent, and Mr. Bress for interveners.
Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor, and may it please the court. I'm Scott Nelson, representing the petitioner Public Citizen. I've asked to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. In this case, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission rejected complaints that the results of the Mid-Continent Independent System Operators 2015-16 planning resource auction for Mid-Continent Zone 4 were unjust and unreasonable, because they reflected an exercise of market power by Dynegy, a pivotal supplier for the zone. Dynegy's capacity was necessary to meet the zone's local clearing requirement, so the auction clearing price could be no lower than its bid of the last increment of capacity needed. And that is what happened. Dynegy's bid of $150 per megawatt day for the last block of its capacity that was needed to satisfy the local clearing requirement established the auction clearing price and raised capacity prices by over 800% over the previous year. The commission's rejection of the complaint that that rate was unjust and unreasonable in violation of the commands of sections 205 and 206 of the Federal Power Act rested exclusively on its conclusion that the auction was held in compliance with the existing terms of Mid-Continent's tariff. In this court, both FERC and intervener Vistra, Dynegy's successor in interest, concede that that is not a sufficient answer under Section 206. The prior approval by the commission of an auction procedure does not render the results of an auction just and reasonable or preclude a challenge under Section 206. Here, that concession alone requires remand. Under the Chenery principle, FERC's and Vistra's attempts to devise alternative rationales for FERC's decision can't save the commission's ruling, given that its stated basis is indefensible by their own admission. Council's arguments also can't save the commission's rejection of Public Citizen's complaint of manipulation by Dynegy, because that decision lacks any rationale at all. It rested on a completely unexplained finding that Dynegy's conduct did not amount to manipulation under the commission's rules. Again,
FERC's response to your, as I understand it, to your market manipulation argument is that market manipulation issues are handled under 306, and that under 306, it did an investigation and concluded there was no evidence of market manipulation, and there's no private right of action under that. That's your response to your market manipulation, and that's not post hoc. They make that argument in the order denying rehearing. So what's your response to that?
Well, I would say that the way FERC argues that in its brief is post hoc, because what the commission said in its rehearing order was that we were not, in fact, improperly invoking a private right of action. And it acknowledged that market manipulation may be raised in a complaint. Now, FERC did in its order
Mr. Nelson, I didn't understand what you just said. FERC says in both in the order denying rehearing and in its brief here, correct me if you think I'm wrong, but as I understand the commission's position, it is that market manipulation complaints under 222 are different from 205 and 206, 205 proceedings, and that you raise a market manipulation claim under 306, and that it treated it that way, even though you in your petition raised it under 206, the FERC said those are properly raised under 306, and it conducted its investigation and then closed it. And it said market manipulation proceedings are different from 205 and 206 proceedings. They're just totally different animals.
Well,
isn't that their position in both places?
Your Honor, I agree that they did say in both places that yeah. manipulation is different and it's procedurally not heard under Section 206. But they do also—
Do you agree with that, by the way? Do you accept that?
I would say, you know, that Commissioner Glick's position that market manipulation can be relevant in a 206 complaint is actually the correct one, because
it can be. I'm sorry, it can be. It can. You said it can be relevant.
Yes, because a rate that is the result of market manipulation in the form of an exercise of market power is not just and reasonable under the Commission's own concept of what constitutes a just and reasonable rate. But further, what I would say is, as to the Commission's rationale in its orders, it acknowledged that in raising the issue of manipulation in a complaint, we weren't guilty of trying to improperly invoke a private right of action, because the Commission acknowledges that an administrative complaint is not a private right of action within the meaning of Section 222's prohibition on a private right of action. And having allowed a party to raise the matter by complaint, regardless of whether it's a complaint under 306 or 206, the Commission, once it entertains the complaint and purports to terminate it on the basis not of an exercise of prosecutorial discretion, but an actual finding that under its rules, no manipulation occurred. You know, once it has ruled on the merits, it's incumbent on it to provide an explanation rather than a mere ipse dixit, which is what it did here. I mean, it said we investigated, fine, and we found no manipulation. It didn't say why they found no manipulation, what it was about the conduct that led it to the conclusion that it was not manipulative, why the claims of manipulation that had been made by the parties were improper.
Okay, but Mr. If this had been just a straight 306 proceeding, there wouldn't have been anything wrong with that, correct?
No, I'm not sure I would agree with that, Your Honor. If the Commission had said in response to such a complaint, we've investigated and in the exercise of our discretion, we don't feel that it's appropriate to devote any further resources to this matter. I think that would have been the end of it had it not been linked to a challenge to the rates.
Okay, that's what I meant. So your right. point is that because this is connected to a 206 complaint, it's different. That's your argument, right?
That's part of it. And it's also that instead of exercising discretion, they made an express finding that the complaint was unfounded and that there was no manipulation. And that is not an exercise of discretion, but in the words of this court in the Southern Union Gas case, that's a summary adjudication of the merits. And that cannot be done based merely on an unexplained and unreasoned assertion. As to the
Can I ask in this regard, one thing that's confusing to me is market manipulation is a pretty it's defined as to what it is, and it's a pretty serious form of behavior. But for 206, if you show market power affected the auction, that's enough. Or that can't
right.
be. Is it your view that, well, market manipulation by definition may also include market power, but to demonstrate market power, you don't have to go all the way to showing market manipulation, do you?
That's correct. And again, the Commission acknowledged that in its right. rehearing order.
Right.
So and
why does it
that,
matter?
That's, That's why, I mean, as you probably noted, you know, my opening argument in the brief is about sections 205 and 206.
What I'm trying to understand, though, when you say what the fight is about the market manipulation, is it that you think the what you call conclusion, what they say is exercise of discretion, that whatever they whatever information they accumulated through that investigatory process should be part of their 206 decision as well? Is that your point?
Or well, I mean,
I think they made a substantive decision, and that's something that's that we just get to challenge directly under.
I think it's the former, Your Honor, that you know, again, we don't have to prevail on that to establish that that the rates here were the result of market power, based on the fact that the way the auction was set up allowed Dynegy to exercise market power. Mm-hmm. But you know, the finding, if there's a determination as to whether it was a deliberately manipulative bidding strategy, that would certainly, I think, also inform the determination under section 206.
I should think if they found that there was market manipulation, they would be hard pressed to not find.
Exactly.
Market power in 206, but the other, it doesn't work the other way.
Exactly.
You know, there's no market manipulation. I'm not sure what that has to do with your 206 claim, other than you can still prevail by showing market power. So I'm not understanding in your response to Judge Tatel what the bridge is that you're trying to argue here between their sort of conclusory statement as to why they weren't going to investigate further, they find no violation, and the 206 process.
Well, I think it's the way you put it at the outset, that although it isn't necessary to find manipulation in order to find the rates unjust and unreasonable, if there were a finding of manipulation, it would.
No, I get that if there were, but if there's not, we're in a case where there was not a finding. And so what bearing does that have on your 206 claim?
There's not a finding, but the finding that there was no market manipulation is not sustainable because you know, it's unreasoned.
Well, so there is, I mean, they did make that, in your view, they made that determination.
Yes, they made the determination.
And so now what happened, and is your argument about that's unsubstantiated, is that just a direct challenge under the market manipulation provision, or is that something you're now importing into your 206 analysis? I'm just not even sure where this analysis mm-hmm. that you want us to undertake is supposed to happen.
It is that if the agency is forced to actually make a reasoned determination on that matter, it would
undoubtedly, as a matter of our 206 analysis?
Yes. Although, again, as you point out, it's not essential, because the 206 analysis on its face is entirely deficient, you know, and concededly so.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I just on the 222, you do, I thought, argue that once the commission articulates a finding on the merits, that the sufficiency of that is reviewable for the adequacy of the articulation or not. I mean, in this court, you're not claiming anything directly under 222, or are you?
I think it's the latter. It's before the court because the two proceedings are related and linked. If it were just a matter of a 222 complaint without any relationship to the lawfulness of a rate, I don't think we'd be here on it.
So, and then how about 205 and 206? I mean, I understand the action in your case to be under 206, because as intervener and amicus have argued, the rate here for purposes of 205 and pre-implementation review is the tariff, not the auction result, not the price resulting from the auction. So if we if we were to agree with that, and you can tell me why you think we shouldn't, but if we were agree with that, what we're really looking at is public citizens complained under 206 that the resulting, well, you can tell me what the target of it is, but I take it to be that there was an exercise of market power. There was a finding by FERC that the tariff going forward was not just and reasonable, and that there was a spike in rates, and that those things together demonstrated that the tariff was not adequately fulfilling its role. Is that your?
Yeah, I think that that captures the 206 aspect of it pretty well. The piece that I would add is that the commission's reasoning in 2015 in finding the tariff inadequate going forward as to the local clearing requirement was based entirely on factors that were equally applicable at the time of the 2015-16 auction. And absent that aspect of the tariff that required several thousand additional megawatt days to be acquired locally, Dynegy would not have been in a position to be the pivotal supplier. And second, as to the conduct threshold that the commission uses to determine whether a rate resulting from the auction requires mitigation, the bulk of the commission's reasoning in finding the tariff unreasonable going forward was also equally applicable in 2015-16 because it was based on evidence that during the period 2013 to 2015, there really were constraints on transmission into PJM that rendered the opportunity cost of selling into PJM an improper measure of whether a rate was reasonable. So those things together are the 206 analysis. What I would say on 205 is, you know, where we differ, I think, principally with the commission and Vistra, given the existing state of the law, is that, you know, although courts have accepted this idea, the fiction really, that that tariff is the filed rate, even in so doing, and this is most evident in the Ninth Circuit's decision in Harris, the courts have still insisted that the commission's role under 205 is not complete unless and until it reviews the resulting rates under 205.
As the part of the reporting, as part of the quarterly reporting, not as a review before those prices can be effective.
I think that's right, the way the Ninth Circuit and this court have looked at it. And that, so therefore, the difference really comes down to burden of proof as opposed to timing, with the burden of proof being on the proponent under 205 and on the complainant under 206. But again, here, you know, that really doesn't make any difference because the commission's rationale for rejecting the complaint under 206 is just wrong as a matter of law because it rests exclusively on the proposition that the rates were just and reasonable because they were the result of an auction carried out in accordance with the terms of the tariff, without regard to whether the terms of the tariff remain just and reasonable at that time or whether the resulting rates reflected an exercise of market power that the tariff's terms were inadequate to prevent.
Why isn't it all, I mean, I take them also to be saying that could be wrong as a matter of law where you've met your burden, where there is reason to think that the tariff didn't do its job. And so I guess my question for you is, to the extent that even to put before us what might otherwise be the harmless error of simply citing to the price being a result of the tariff. What have you done to put that in issue? You know, in other words, what's your sort of ticking off the items, how you met your burden of proof under 206?
Well, I mean, first I would say that the commission itself did not say anyone failed to carry their burden under 206. If you look at the relevant portions, the ordering portions of both the initial order and the rehearing order, the words burden of proof don't appear, nor did the commission find, as its briefs and Vistra's suggest, that the rate here was cost justified, that it was not the result of an exercise of market power, that it was reasonable in relation to rates elsewhere, or that it wasn't because Dynegy was a pivotal supplier. But I think what we and the other complainants collectively established to carry our burden was that Dynegy was a pivotal supplier. In other words, it had market power, that the rate here, but for its market power, would not have been anywhere near $150 per megawatt day, and that there were features of the tariff that resulted in Dynegy's being able to exercise that the commission itself held were unjust and unreasonable for reasons equally applicable in the 2015 to 16 auction.
And that is the
local clearing requirement and the conduct threshold initial reference level. Unless the court.
Yeah. Well, we'll hear from the commission now. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Lona Perry for the commission. It is not the case, as Mr. Nelson just stated, that the commission did not make a finding that they failed to meet their burden under 206 to show that there was an exercise of market power in the auction and that resulted in unjust and unreasonable rates. I would direct your attention to paragraph 14 of the rehearing order, where the commission specifically said, Public Citizen has not met its burden as a complainant to demonstrate that activity meeting that definition of market manipulation occurred and resulted in rates that are unjust and unreasonable.
Can I back you up there and ask the same thing? That seems to turn on market manipulation as opposed to market power. Does the commission understand market manipulation and use of market power under 206 to be different things?
An exercise of market power could include market manipulation.
I understand that market manipulation is hard to imagine how you don't have market power, but right. I'm asking the other one. So all they found here was burden of proof on market manipulation. And for 206 purposes, I thought we were talking about their burden of proof that market power infected the auction in a way that caused the rates not to be just and reasonable.
Your Honor, market power is
different from, I mean, the Venn diagrams can certainly overlap in parts, but there are forms of market power that fall short of the very high standard of showing market manipulation. Is that correct?
Certainly, Your Honor. And in paragraph 15 of the rehearing order, the commission recognized that there was a distinct question of whether an exercise of market power in the auction resulted in unjust and unreasonable rates.
Fantastic.
And where the commission addressed the burden of proof under 206 as to market power, the commission noted that the arguments that Public Citizen made with respect to showing that there had been unjust and unreasonable rates were the rates were too high, and the commission had made in December of 2015 prospective changes to the market mitigation measures in the tariff. And the commission answered both of those in the complaint order in paragraph 84. The commission...
You're in the initial decision now?
In the initial decision, okay. Your Honor. Yes, at paragraph 84, it's at page 105 of your joint appendix. The commission found specifically they denied the complaint allegations, finding specifically that the auction clearing price is not shown to be unjust and unreasonable because it is higher than expected. And that is where they Well, because the argument that was made, if you look in particular at the, in their rehearing request, the argument that was made was the 800% argument. This rate was so high, it must be unjust and unreasonable. And that was the argument that the commission was responding to, which is just because a rate is high, particularly in an auction market context, that's not a showing that it's unjust and unreasonable. You don't meet your burden to show it's unjust and unreasonable.
The problem here is, it's not just that it was higher than they liked. One, it was astronomically higher than it had been in the past and than it was in any of the other zones. This was an extraordinary change. So this isn't just that's higher than what I think it should be. This was a very sharp and acute spike in prices isolated to zone four, combined with the evidence put in by Public Citizen and on which the commission relied, showing that there were problems in the tariff that allowed this sort of change in the IRL and the CT numbers because it was assuming this ability to export power to PJM that in fact was the commission found for this very year in question was wrong. So I don't know how just saying, well, just because that price is higher isn't enough of a basis is any, I don't know how you get from that to saying they didn't meet their burden of proof with the astronomical nature in the of the change in the price. Now, there it could very well be legitimate reasons for it. I don't know. But an astronomical high rate that is a sharp departure from past and from what's going on everywhere around this zone and the problems with the tariff that the commission agreed required change, made the tariff incapable of providing just and reasonable rates when those exact same problems existed in 2015-16 auctions. So please tell me where they addressed that accumulation of evidence and concluded that they hadn't met their burden of proof.
Several responses to that, Your Honor. In the first place, the commission had a separate discussion of the tariff and its prospective changes to the tariff in the 2015 order. And I'll get to that in a moment if I could. I would like to start first, though, with your point about the simply being higher, it being so much higher than expected. And that is the significance of the citation the commission makes to Dynegy's answer to the complaints at 33 to 35, which is—
Wait a minute, Ms. Perry. That's in the discussion of the party's respective positions.
No, Your Honor, that's the footnote. It's the footnote to the statement that the price is not unjust and unreasonable because it is higher than expected. It's footnote 243, which is follows that sentence.
What page of the JA are you on here?
I'm sorry, it's JA 105. It's paragraph 84. In footnote 243, the footnote to that sentence refers to Dynegy's answer to the complaint at 33 to 35, which, as you point out, the commission had in the preceding paragraph described at some length. And what that shows, what that evidence was put in to show was that the prices that were charged, the $150 price that was charged, was consistent with the going forward marginal costs of the marginal unit that was bid into that auction. And the significance of that is that what happened in the 2015 auction is that they ended up going further into the resources that were available, going to more expensive units to obtain the amount of capacity that they needed. For example, as I understand it, in 2014, Dynegy had a similar bid structure.
I'm looking for commission findings.
Well, that's the commission findings pointing to this evidence. There was evidence in the record that the auction bids that were placed by Dynegy were consistent with their going forward costs. And as the commission has pointed out, from 2015 forward, a bid, even from a pivotal seller that is consistent with going forward marginal cost, is a competitive bid. And the tariff has always, before the changes and after the changes.
But this is still focused on just this price thing. And to be fair, it strikes me as a bit indirect. If somehow you're saying that with this sentence, which just says unreasonable because it's higher than expected, and then a footnote citing these things, I mean, they now have adopted everything as their own decision. That's every word that's on those pages of the cited briefs. Is that your position?
I'm not suggesting that they adopted this. What they were pointing out is there is evidence in the record.
This is very important to me. So if they weren't adopting, by citing to those pages, they weren't adopting that as their own decision.
They were noting that there was evidence in the record that these were just and reasonable rates, and there was no contrary evidence. The Public Citizen never put in any contrary evidence.
Okay. Again, they aren't saying, the sentence says it's not unjust and reasonable because it is higher than expected, which is not necessarily the same thing as the very sharp and acute and sudden divergence we had here. And then you said, well, they dropped a footnote to MISO and Dynegy's answers. And the answers are evidence, but they didn't necessarily adopt that evidence. They just pointed to it, and they didn't have anything to cite from Public Citizen. Is that your answer? And so there wasn't, so Public Citizen didn't meet its burden of proof?
That's exactly the point, Your Honor, is Public Citizen had the burden of proof. Okay. The point is there was evidence.
Because when I gave you the list, it wasn't just higher than expected.
Right, exactly, Your Honor.
We'll give that your reading. But there was also the very same evidence that caused the commission to say this tariff isn't going to work anymore with these presumptions about exporting to the PJM market. It's not going to work. It's setting the wrong numbers. And that, again, the commission found that exact same problem was already existing at the time of the 2015-16 auction. This is all Public Citizen evidence. And yet it said we don't need to look at the 2015-16 auction. So I don't understand how just this here is saying they didn't meet their burden of proof when you haven't addressed this additional evidence. So they had evidence that was so powerful, that the commission found so credible, it ordered the changing of the tariff going forward. Isn't that part of the evidence?
Your Honor, the commission addressed the evidence with respect to the tariff in a later part, and I'll talk about that now, in the rehearing order at paragraphs 20 to 23.
Okay, wait, let me
get that. That's a joint appendix at 135 and 136.
Okay.
And the commission found that the fact that it made, specifically in paragraph 22, the commission found that the fact that it made prospective changes in December of 2015 does not support the claim that the April 2015 auction reflected the exercise of market power and produced unreasonable results.
Sure, but that ignored that the 2015 decision rested on two prongs. It rested on these changes that were coming to PJM, but it said, I'm at J940 now, paragraph 86, in addition, based on the record before us, We have found that the amount of MISO capacity that can be sold in PJM is significantly limited due to the availability of transmission services. And they're talking about an existing problem, not a future problem. It's in addition to these future changes, the record evidence before us shows that it was much more limited ability to transmit these services to PJM, right? But that's not mentioned, that that second prong of the commission's 2015 decision, unless I've missed it, you can tell me, appears nowhere in this analysis where you say they said they didn't meet their burden of proof. That's where I'm really confused.
Well, Your Honor, I think that you have to view this response as being in response to Public Citizens rehearing request. And if you look, they're responding to page 21 of the rehearing request, which is at 1054, Joint Appendix 1054. And if you look at that rehearing request, what it says is the commission didn't determine whether the tariff was just and reasonable in April, in the spring of 2015. And this is particularly striking, given the determination in December that the tariff provisions were no longer just and reasonable. In responding to that statement, it says nothing about, explain to us why the existing conditions in spring of 2015 were not sufficient for an unjust and reasonable finding. It doesn't raise anything about the existing conditions. It simply says you found in December of 2015 that it was unjust and unreasonable. Why is that not enough?
And well, no, but it's pointing to this very two-pronged decision that I just referenced. And I guess I don't understand why, if it's good enough for the commission to point to answers in a footnote to show evidence, but not really adopt it, it's not okay for them to point to the commission's very decision that was a two-pronged decision and say, you haven't addressed this.
But again, we go back to the burden of proof. And again, we
exactly what I'm on. It's not going back to, I am still on the burden of proof. And I'm asking you why, when they say, look what you said in 2015, which was a two-prong explanation about existing problems as well as future problems, they brought that in. They brought that in. The commission relied on that evidence. And the commission said it's both future and present. And why they didn't say, look at what you said in 2015 about our evidence isn't meeting their burden of proof.
The 2015 decision was expressly based on both prongs, as you say, expressly based on both prongs. There was no finding that, and that was, in fact, most of the argument that the parties had made to the commission was about the existing conditions. And the commission didn't make a finding that the existing conditions were, in fact, sufficient all by themselves to justify an unjust and reasonable finding.
Right, they relied on both. I'm sorry, I don't mean to cut you off.
No, please go ahead.
I have sort of a procedural version of, I think, the same issue, which is, given FERC's position as you articulate it, why did FERC wait until 2019 to respond to Public Citizens' claim under Section 206 that the auction results suggested that the price was unjust and unreasonable? If the prices were just and reasonable because they complied with the tariff, and publics are presumptively just and reasonable because they comply with the tariff, and Public Citizen had no evidence to the contrary, then why didn't FERC just say that in the 2015 order?
I don't know the reason for the delay, Your Honor. I know the reason they didn't say it in the 2015 order, which they expressly stated in the 2015 order, was it needed to be done promptly in order that the new tariff provisions could be implemented in time for the next auction. And so they declined to resolve all the other issues at that time.
But in your view, it's just open and shut that the auction price results from a tariff that had been ex ante approved as just and reasonable. And the burden is on Public Citizen under 206. And in your view, nothing that Public Citizen had said met that burden. So it seems peculiar to me that the Public Citizen petition was granted only in part, and that the commission's, I mean, it, to me, it legally implies that at that time, the commission thought that Public Citizen had at least sort of prima facie raised a 206 claim that needed to be looked into. And yet now you're saying, really harking back to what was on the table in 2015, that it was deficient all along. And I'm just having trouble squaring that.
Well, a couple of things, Your Honor. The commission was litigating the 206 complaints of a number of complainants to start off with, and a number of complainants that's made a number of arguments that Public Citizen didn't make. We are just now down to Public Citizen, and Public Citizen is the only party who sought rehearing. So we are now down to only what it is that Public Citizen was arguing. But there were a number of other complaints and a number of parties who put in evidence of all sorts that were also under consideration.
Let me ask also, is there a circumstance in which the conduct threshold could be met, but the commission nonetheless find an exercise of market power that would show the tariff to be inadequate in shielding consumers? In other words, the fact that the conduct threshold is not exceeded, again, maybe that creates a presumption that the tariff is adequate, but it isn't a conclusive presumption, is it? You could have an exercise of market power and or market manipulation that yielded a price below the conduct threshold.
Well, certainly somebody could file a complaint making that allegation. The point is just the way the tariff works, the tariff would not mitigate that bid. That's what the conduct threshold means, is that it would, the market monitor would not mitigate that bid. It would be deemed acceptable under the tariff.
Right, but unless and until there's another reason to believe that market power was exercised, or even worse, that there was market manipulation, right? So that so if you were in sort of, you know, federal court parlance, if you wouldn't file like a 12B6 on a Section 206 claim just saying, sorry, price below conduct threshold, no claim, right? You wouldn't, because in fact, there could be some exercise of market power.
It's possible. I mean, the fact
that evidenced by an above conduct threshold price.
Certainly somebody could file a complaint alleging that it was unjust and unreasonable, and it wouldn't be a 12B6 issue, as right. you
say. The commission recognizes that might still be legally viable, even though...
Exactly, but they would have to come up with evidence indicating why, even though it was within what had been deemed to be the competitive level, it was nonetheless an exercise of, it demonstrated an exercise of market power.
And what's your... Go ahead, Judge Taylor.
No, I'm sorry. I was going to change the subject.
I was too. You go. Had the floor for a little while.
I'll change the subject. I want to ask you, Ms. Perry, about, I want to go back to the market manipulation issue and approach it from a slightly different perspective. I understand what the commission said in its order and what you say in your brief about that. But what I'm interested in is the commission's view that claims of market manipulation cannot be pursued in a 206 proceeding. That's the commission's view. The commission's view, as I understand it, is market manipulation under violating 222 is handled under 306. You did the investigation. The investigation was closed, and there's no private right of action, end of matter. But as I read our market manipulation cases, we don't have that many of them, but they're almost all brought by competitors claiming market manipulation by a competitor. This is a 206 proceeding by ratepayers claiming that market manipulation produced a unjust and unreasonable rate. And my question to you is what in the statute or our case law supports that that division that the commission has adopted here?
think the commission clarified on rehearing what its position is on this subject. And there are two separate things going on with regard to the allegations of market manipulation. And the commission said, clearly, on the one hand, there is...
Before you go into that, will you tell me if my perception of the commission's position is correct? That is that a claims of market manipulation are properly brought under 306, not 206, right?
Yes, Your Honor, for violations of Section 222. But that does not mean that the commission does not consider allegations of market power, which could include allegations of market manipulation.
I'm sorry. Say again what you said. I interrupted you and didn't mean to. That doesn't mean what?
I'm sorry. That doesn't mean the commission's investigation of market manipulation allegations under Section, as violating Section 222, are within the commission's discretion.
Correct.
But that doesn't mean that the commission does not consider whether there were unjust and unreasonable rates that resulted from exercises of market power, which could include market manipulation.
But in this particular case, the commission disposed of the market manipulation claims without any explanation, which would be fine if it was a straightforward 306 case. But the petitioners have brought their market manipulation claims under 206, claiming that even though the tariff was complied with, market manipulation may have rendered... Look, here's what Commissioner Glick said this. The fact that MISO and the individual market participants appear to have followed the relevant tariff does not respond to allegations that the resulting rates are unjust and unreasonable as a result of market manipulation. It seems to me, what's wrong? That seems to me what the petitioners are arguing here.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Why isn't that correct?
That's exactly the dichotomy that the commission discussed in paragraphs 12 to 15 of the rehearing order. Although there is the non-public investigation of the 222 violations, which is commission discretion, the commission specifically found in paragraph 14, which is at the joint appendix 131, that Public Citizen had not met its burden as a complainant to demonstrate that activity meeting the definition of market manipulation occurred and resulted in rates that are unjust and unreasonable.
But I don't understand that, given the allegations they made. I mean, the allegations they made in their 206 proceeding is that capacity was withheld in order to allow a higher bid here. That they withheld capacity, that there was history here, that there had been an effort to combine the two units that was resisted by the producers. They have a lot of allegations, and the commission simply rejected them without... It did a full investigation of market manipulation. As it says itself, it interviewed dozens of witnesses, reviewed hundreds of pages of documents, but dismissed the complaint without any reason. That's very different from saying Dynergy's hadn't met its burden. There's absolutely no explanation. I mean, the only explanation that is possibly in the record for why Public Citizen did meet its burden is in the commission's report on manipulation, which isn't public. We don't know what's in there. There's no explanation at all for why it didn't meet its burden. The commission simply asserts it didn't. And the reasons presumably are in its secret report on manipulation.
No, Your Honor, the point is, it's as Public Citizen's burden of proof. It was their obligation to produce evidence of market manipulation.
Okay, where do I find in the commission's orders an explanation for why it didn't meet its burden of proof? Other than a statement that it didn't, where do I find that explanation?
Because
under 206, under 206, Ms. Perry, 206, that it didn't meet its burden of proof. I agree with you. The burden is on the public citizen in a 206 proceeding. It has to convince. It has a burden of proof of showing. So let me make sure I get this. I'm sorry to go in a different direction, but you agree then that if public citizen could attempt to prove under 206 that market manipulation produced unjust and unreasonable rates. Do you agree with that?
Yes, Your Honor. And as a matter of fact, Commissioner Glick on footnote 14 of his dissent at Joint Appendix 140 recognized that the commission in paragraph 14 was making a section 206 finding.
Okay, fine. So then let's go back to my question. Now that we agree, I didn't understand that that would be your position, but now that you agree that a complainant bringing a 206 complaint like public citizen may argue that market manipulation resulted in unjust and unreasonable rates. We agree on that now. And the commission, I agree the burden of proof is on them, but where do I find an explanation in the commission's orders as to why it was not, why public citizen had not satisfied its burden of proof? The only thing I saw was random statements, which are correct, that there's no private right of action. But where is the explanation for why public citizen failed to meet its burden of proof under 206?
The explanation, Your Honor, would be going back to the same commission statements we have been talking about.
Why don't you just find those for me? Tell me right now which ones answer that question. Which ones precisely answer that question?
The closest answer, Your Honor, would be the answer in paragraph 84 of the complaint order with Joint Appendix 105, where the commission found that an auction clearing price is not unjust and unreasonable because it is higher than expected. Because the thing you have to recall here is
that's not responsive to Commissioner Glick's point or my point, which is that the fact that it complies with the tariff is not inconsistent with the proposition that the rates might have resulted from market manipulation. As he says, he's pretty clear about that. He says, just because something is legal does not mean that it's not market manipulation.
No, Your Honor, this doesn't go to tariff compliance. This goes to it being an unexpectedly high rate. And you have to bear in mind here that what was alleged was economic withholding. And the commission discusses at paragraph 85, also on JA 105, economic withholding. And what economic withholding means is that you submit a bid that is substantially higher than a competitive level.
Yeah.
And causes the market clearing price to rise. So the fact that you have to show, the burden of proof is show that it was substantially higher than a competitive level. And that is what the commission was not shown.
Okay. All right. Well, so just my last question is, I just want to be absolutely sure that when I go back and think about this case and I look to find where the commission explained that public citizen had failed to meet its burden of proof, I look to paragraphs 84 and 85, right?
Paragraphs 84 and 85, and there is the discussion of the tariff at paragraphs 20 through 23 of the rehearing order.
And which ones? 21?
Paragraph 20 through 23 of the rehearing order, which is a joint appendix 135 and 136. But these are in response to public citizens' arguments, which were the price is too high. And
that's helpful. Okay.
So,
Judge Millett, did you have a question?
I was just trying to figure out about, I mean, I think one of the things that Public Citizen points to here is not just that the price was high, because as we know, with a vertical curve, you're going to have a lot of price volatility, prices that are from, you know, 0 to 60 in no time, to paraphrase, but that it was just in this zone. So we don't have kind of a Texas system where, or situation where there is a capacity problem and all the prices are going up and they're sending the market signal that new capacity needs to be built. I don't think anybody understands what happened in this auction as an accurate signal that new capacity needs to be built. And so when ordinarily you'd have the conduct threshold and you'd say, you know, sometimes the prices are going to be up there when you have a, you know, a lack of capacity. And that's why we have the capacity auction, is to protect against that. But here it's, you know, anomalous. And isn't that also pertinent to whether there's a reason for the commission here to think that the tariff did not sufficiently protect against exercise of market power in the 2015-16 auction?
Your Honor, the price was higher in Zone 4 during this auction because they had to reach further into their resources to more expensive resources in order to provide the capacity they needed. I don't know why that particular fact would necessarily...
I'm sorry, is that what you just said? Is that a finding by the commission?
Well, it's just the way the auction works. I mean, the commission explains the auction function, that it's a question of you continue taking bids until you get to the marginal unit necessary to satisfy the capacity requirement.
And isn't that exactly I know that the commission and interveners and amicus point to the PJM change, but the other aspect of the going forward determination to change the tariff was that, wasn't it? And so that was at play in April of 2015, was it not?
Well, the point about the local clearing requirement, Your Honor, is that in the reason why the commission focused on the mitigation provisions of the tariff is that the local clearing requirement is a reliability requirement, and it just defines how much capacity has to come from inside the zone. And the point is, so long as the tariff mitigation measures are functioning, there will be no ability to exercise market power as a result of the local clearing requirement, even if you're a pivotal seller, because the mitigation measures are specifically designed to mitigate any market power of that sort. So you would have to find
that they were held to be inadequate, presumably because they weren't effectively mitigating market power under the particular circumstances that obtained, including the local clearing requirement, or not.
The finding was that they would not be sufficient to do that going forward, given the changes in the PJM capacity market.
But not only that.
Exactly. But the commission specifically said that the changes in the PJM, and this is paragraph 87 of the 2015 order, which is at J941, the commission specifically found that the changes in PJM will further limit the already existing problems. And so it was the combination of the two, it was specifically the combination of the two that made the commission conclude that going forward, it was not a reasonable opportunity.
So your life would have been a lot easier if the commission had also at some point made a finding that even without the PJM changes, it would not have needed to change the tariff going forward. Your life would be much easier, but it didn't. Right. So fine, did it?
I have another question. Oh,
go ahead.
I just wanted to follow up on what makes the tariff process reliable is not just that an auction is conducted consistent with an existing and FERC-approved tariff, but there's this ex post process, right?
Exactly. You have to have yes, both. Your Honor.
And that ex post process involves filing reports. But what all the commission, but the points of filing reports is so that the commission can engage in what the Ninth Circuit described in the California Isabel Harris case is active ongoing review. And we've required a procedure for monitoring those reports. But all FERC relied on paragraph on J134, this is rehearing, was the fact that reports were filed. And which has caused me to realize that I don't have any idea how this active ongoing monitoring process applies. The commission, like I said, relied on the fact that reports were filed, but that of course is not the ex post requirement. The ex post requirement is that FERC's monitoring and using the reports and maybe anything else that comes to its attention to do so. The commission didn't rely on its own monitoring or any determination that it might have made based on the reports that were filed. So can you explain to me, first of all, who looks at those reports, the reports that were filed here, reports referenced by the commission, and then how and when is a decision made by the commission that, yeah, those reports don't raise any, don't raise our eyebrows? How did that happen in this case? And maybe you have to explain it more generally how it goes, but in this case, because the commission doesn't seem to rely on its own monitoring.
Well, generally how it goes is described in Montana Consumer Council at page 919, where the court discusses how FERC monitors the data that comes in the quarterly reports to ensure that the reported transactions are consistent with a competitive, unmanipulated market. Meaning it does, it's not looking at each individual transaction to see if it's adjusted reasonable rate in the sense of you filing the adjusted reasonable rate application, but it's looking for the what is expected of a competitive, unmanipulated market. And
maybe I'm not clear enough. So I'm not talking about how courts just describe what FERC's obligation is. I'm saying, so FERC got these reports in, it referenced those in its rehearing order. What did it do with them?
The commission initiated an investigation, Your Honor.
Into market manipulation based on those reports as opposed to the complaint?
They initiated the initiation of the investigation, to my knowledge, that was never tied to the complaints.
The commission initiated those reports.
The commission didn't specify, but it was shortly after the auction that the commission initiated the investigation. The commission's
did it,
review.
I'm getting really confused here. So I had thought, so you're saying that the investigation of the market manipulation wasn't triggered by the complaints that were filed, but was triggered by the reports that were filed. I wouldn't have thought the first report would have been filed until July. Maybe it came in, I guess, the end of April, right after the auction. Is that what did it?
Your Honor, if you look at the order of non-public formal investigation, which unfortunately is not apparently in the JA, but it's cited in our brief.
I guess I don't have it in front of me because it's not in the JA.
I'm sorry. I mean, it specifies that the auction was commenced shortly after the informal part of the auction, not the formal part, but an informal investigation was initiated shortly after the conclusion of the auction.
But we don't know what it was based on. Because you began by saying, I thought maybe I misunderstood. I thought you said, oh, that investigation was based on the reports, not the complaint. But now you're saying we don't know what caused that.
I don't know what specifically caused them to initiate the investigation, but the commission's review of rates is ongoing.
I'm asking really in particular what happens with these reports. Like, is there an office that reviews them? Does someone do a report to the commission quarterly? Because this is really critical, sort of belt and suspenders to making sure we can rely on tariffs, that there be this post hoc, not just filing of reports, but active ongoing review by FERC. And if FERC, by, re, by its reference in its rehearing decision, was relying on that reporting and concluding that the tariff was sufficient. I'm trying to understand how it came to that determination.
But Your Honor, paragraph 18, again, is another example of the burden of proof.
Because this is exactly my question. The commission has its own burden here. It has its own obligation, not a burden of proof in a court sense. It has its own obligation to do this reviewing and to make a determination that, yep, the tariff's still working, or we don't see anything here that raises our eyebrows. Okay. And that's why my question is just about how that process worked in this case. And if it helps to describe it more generally, that's fine. That they looked at the reports and they did exactly what they're required to do ex post. And they looked at the reports and I thought your first answer to me was that triggered the investigation, but now we don't know what triggered the investigation.
Well, it is a non-public investigation, Your Honor. I mean, they don't disclose. Okay, then I don't know why you're telling me
what caused it. Okay, then so we don't know what caused. So if I misunderstood you, I thought you said that was didn't rely on the complaint at all. It was on the report. What is inside FERC? Just please explain to me. They file these reports. They're massive spreadsheets. Who looks at them? How is this determination made? What happened ex post here?
To be honest, Your Honor, I don't know the answer to that question. I can find that out.
We do know from the record that it was closed by the chair alone, correct?
That's right, Your Honor.
It never went to the commission, correct?
It was closed by the chairman. Apparently, given Commissioner Glick's dissents, he apparently was apprised of what was found in the investigation, but he was not consulted on whether it should be closed or not.
Right. In fact, he said that had he been consulted, he would have not agreed with that. Right.
That hasn't been challenged, but is that typical, do we know, for the commissioner alone to act?
I don't know.
I'm sorry. I have two more questions. Yeah. We've kept you up here for a long time, but I mean, FERC set a refund effective date in the 2015 order, and I take it that's just because that's a requirement in the statute. It hasn't ordered any refunds, has it?
No, Your Honor.
With respect to this. And what would be the effect, or how would a refund be framed with that effective date? In other words, did any of the actual capacity sales flowing from the 2015-2016 auction price take place within the refund period?
Actually, they all did, Your Honor, because the auction is an annual auction that sets the price for the upcoming year. And so it would have all of the prices being charged would have occurred during the refund period, although the auction obviously preceded it. I'm sorry.
And I just had one other question, which is about this. You know, throughout the briefs, there's a back and forth about a price and whether the auction price is a rate subject to 205. And the amicus, I think, takes the hardest line that the auction price just is not a rate, although even it sometimes uses the term rate to refer to an auction price. Is it FERC's position that it has to review whether actual auction price, the capacity price that results from an auction is just and reasonable under 206, but that it doesn't have to do the ex ante 205 review of that? Or what is the commission's position with respect to what is, I know rates includes tariffs, but does it only include tariffs or?
What the commission monitors the filings for, as it says in paragraph 18 of the rehearing order, which we were just discussing at Joint Appendix 134, it monitors the reporting for evidence of market power. So it's not looking at whether individual transactions are themselves just and reasonable. It's looking for whether there are patterns or indicia of exercises of market power in that reporting. The court in Lockyer at 1013 describes it as reporting requirements for the administration of the tariff.
But in your brief at 29, at 33, at 45 to 46, you refer to the auction price as a rate. And I'm just trying to, so that's looking at that rate as potentially relevant to whether there's been a failure under the tariff to guard against an exercise of market power?
Well, it's looking at the prices being charged, the rate, if you will, to see whether there is evidence of an exercise of market power. Exactly. Okay. And it's, but not to looking at each individual transaction to see if it itself in some, you know, cost-based rate filing kind of way is a just and reasonable rate.
On the other hand, it could be key evidence. So it could on its own actually raise a question. But I think I understand your position that it is, it's not the object of the 206 inquiry, but it bear, it could bear on it. And often, I assume often does.
Yes, Ron.
I'm sorry, I still have to ask one more question. That's on my line. Given that paragraph 18 talks only about the fact that reports were filed, is there any evidence in this record that the ex post review by the commission of the quarterly reports happened and that the commission, not the chair, the commission concluded that they had nothing in those reports triggered concerns about the tariff?
There is no discussion in the orders of the commission's review of the quarterly reports, Your Honor. Okay. There was the investigation, but there's no independent discussion of what they reviewed in the quarterly reports.
Not what they reviewed. Did they come to a did the commission come to the ex post conclusion that were that's required?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I didn't understand the question.
Come to the ex post requirement that we look at the reports, and that's sort of our double check that nothing went haywire with the tariff. Is there any evidence in the record that the commission came to that conclusion?
The point again, Your Honor, is the argument is it's the burden of proof. It wasn't the commission's affirmative duty. This is a 206 complaint. It's not the commission's
affirmative duty was to do this ex post after.
Absolutely, Your Honor, but okay, not
tell me now where it happened because.
Well, but the ex post, Your Honor, is
about it not having happened here.
The ex post review, Your Honor, is independent, though, of this 206 complaint proceeding. It's like the investigation. Just it's the burden of proof.
I'm just asking you. The commission has its own burden here. It's the one that chose to rely on the tariff, and it has its own burden because to rely on the tariff, you have to show both prongs. Commission chose to rely on the tariff. Commission asserted the first prong. And as to the second prong, the ex post review, it said reports were filed. That's kind of stark, and that's all it said. And then Commissioner Glick says, yeah, the commission didn't make a decision. That's what I'm trying to ask. Is there something where you think the commission was responding to that point?
Well, there's nothing specifically about the review of the quarterly reports and the orders, Your Honor, no.
Okay, thank you. Right.
Okay, we'll hear from the intervener, Mr. Bress.
Thank you, Judge Tatel, and may it please the court. There are issues here that are larger systemic issues that I think are important issues. There's also very fact-specific issues about this record. I'd like to start with the larger issues, which this court, several of you have asked about in the last few minutes. I'd like to start with FERC's duty to monitor, as Judge Millett was discussing. I think there's a real danger here of pushing that to the point where we get to the incorrect position the public citizen is arguing that every time there's an auction, the commission has a 205 duty to make a just and reasonable determination before those prices are allowed to go into effect. I think that's false. I think that it's this court has held in interstate, among other cases, that it is enough that there's an ex ante determination of lack of market power or mitigated market power. And there are ex post reporting that's done with your backup being the potential for 206 filings. Now, the 206 filings can be either by the commission or they can be by private parties. But because these reports are public reports, they serve the function of shedding daylight, frankly, into the process to allow 206 filings. There was no claim in this case, and it's really not before the court. That's why I think, Judge Millett, you probably found some of the answers unsatisfying, but there was no claim in this case that FERC failed this general monitoring duty. So there isn't any evidence and any writing about it. There wasn't anything in the rehearing petition about it. The argument that was made in the rehearing petition was FERC has a duty under 205 to review all rates before they go into effect, or at least review the tariffs before the rates go into effect.
My concern is that the commission itself begs the question. When it says, we're relying to reject this argument about the 2015-16 argument on the tariff in compliance with the tariff. And we all know that requires two determinations. One, the approval of a tariff in advance and its terms, which happened here. No one contests that. And it requires this after the fact review, not just the filing of reports, but this after the fact determination, this active ongoing review. So someone has to look and say, I'm not saying they have to do anything formalized here, but we have to know somehow that the commission paid attention to the reports and nothing to see here.
Yeah, but the problem
that we have, the problem we have here is all the commission said is, and those reports were filed, and Public Citizen doesn't dispute that they were filed. And then we have this sort of dust up with Commissioner Glick about, the commission didn't come to a conclusion. And so I'm just trying to understand how that works, because it was a commission that chose to rely on the tariff. I'm not saying anything here about prices or anything like that. I'm looking at the commission's rationale and its sufficiency.
So, Your Honor, I think I'm trying to at least respond to that question. I understand the question. First of all, I think the commission had to rely on the tariff for purposes of the 206 here. In other words, there was a tariff. It was in place at the time of the auction. The commission didn't have the ability at that point after the fact to initiate a 205 proceeding into the tariff. Now, there is a question that's raised by Public Citizen as to whether the tariff, and it's a 206 question, whether the tariff was sufficient at the time of the auction. And I agree that the commission had to respond to that. In terms of the monitoring, this is just a general requirement for the approval and for the lawfulness, frankly, market-based pricing tariffs, is that there's an ex ante finding and there are reports that are filed that allow both the commission and the public to review them. There is no second determination. In other words, there's not another section of the act that's neither 205 nor 206 that the commission has to make an affirmative finding on the record, but on its monitoring. There can be a claim, perhaps, if someone wants to raise it, commission, this tariff is no longer itself just and reasonable because you aren't doing any monitoring. But that claim wasn't made in this case. You can search the record. There is no claim in this case of that sort. It's why you don't see any discussion of that by the commission in its orders or in our briefing. The only argument that was made is, commission, you had a 205 duty to take a completely fresh approach, putting the burden on the proponent before you allow the prices to go into effect. You had a 205 duty.
And a 206.
I agree with that totally, yeah. Judge Pillard. And I'll get to that. I think the 206 is actually the tricky part of this case. I think these other issues are quite important systemically, and I think it's important to get them right. I think that, when we get to market manipulation, it's another, I think, important systemic point here. The only argument, first of all, that was made on rehearing, and I invite the court to take another look at the rehearing petition if necessary. The only argument that was made by Public Citizen there is that the commission had a duty to explain, for purposes of its investigative adjudicatory or enforcement proceeding, why it didn't find market manipulation. All of the references that it's making now in its brief to, oh, this is just 206, it's part of our proof that it was unjust and unreasonable, is not in the argument section at all of the rehearing petition. But if you get to that, I totally agree again with the commission that certainly market manipulation, as well as market power, can be a cause of unjust and unreasonable rates. I don't think that that's—
Wait, before you go any further, Mr. Bress, hold on. I just want to capture what you just said, if you don't mind for a minute.
Oh, of course.
Because it was very helpful. So your point is that that a complainant under 206, in the 206 complaint, can argue that market manipulation produced unjust and unreasonable rates, that they can do that. But is that correct?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Okay. And second, that Public Citizen didn't argue that in its petition for rehearing. Is that your point?
Yes. That it's forfeit? Petition for rehearing was focused on the failure to continue and to have an enforcement proceeding, Your Honor, which would have been a 220.
Okay.
That was my point.
Oh, okay. So in answer to, so the answer to, I read this sentence from Commissioner Glick, where he says, the fact that they followed the relevant language doesn't respond to an allegation that the resulting rates were unjust and unreasonable because of market manipulation. You agree with that?
No, actually, I don't, but for a different reason, Your Honor.
Wait, I thought you did agree with that.
No, if I can explain.
Yeah, please.
The reason is that there were no unjust and unreasonable rates. In other words, in theory, certainly market manipulation or market power could lead to unjust and unreasonable rates. The commission, the bottom line of 206 is, were the rates unjust and unreasonable? The commission found that there was no proof here or no determination that the rates themselves were unjust and unreasonable. In some sense, that means that any question about market manipulation becomes somewhat irrelevant, because the bottom line here is the rates themselves, what was produced in the end.
Are you talking about the auction price?
Are you saying, are you saying that because the rates were produced by the tariff that had been approved, they are immune from a claim that they, even though they complied with the tariff, they were produced by an auction that complied with the tariff, because they did, they're immune from a claim that they nonetheless resulted from market manipulation?
What I'm saying, to be very precise, Your Honor,
yeah,
and I want to be precise with you, is that if you have a tariff that has mitigation measures in it that are sufficient to ensure that the clearing price that's produced in the auction is comparable to the price that would be produced in a workably competitive market,
right,
then yes, the answer is that the tariff itself is just and reasonable, and the prices that result from that may go up and down with the market, but they're not individually challengeable.
Why didn't the commission respond that way? Why was the commission's response to the Public Citizen's complaint about market manipulation that they hadn't met their burden of proof? As I understand your point, there is no burden of proof for them to satisfy, because these were by definition just and reasonable rates, right?
Your Honor, two things on that. Number one, the commission of course gives two responses. One's in paragraph 13, where it discusses its 222 proceeding. And I think we're past that here, at least in this argument.
Yes. There's
general agreement on that.
Right.
The second is in paragraph 14. And what they said specifically is Public Citizen has not met its burden as a complainant to demonstrate that activity meeting that definition occurred and resulted in rates that are unjust and unreasonable. And the and there is important, Your Honor, because if it doesn't result in rates that are unjust and unreasonable, then whether it's potential market power, whether it's manipulative conduct, and after all, manipulation is a conduct one engages in, is not the 206 ultimate question. And I'd like to get even more specific for you
here. Let me just ask you. So is Glick is wrong that just because something is legal doesn't mean it isn't market manipulation.
I'm not sure I got that, Your Honor, but let me try to rephrase it. Mm-hmm. To the extent that Commissioner Glick is saying that you can have market manipulation that is punishable by the commission, even if prices are just and reasonable, I think that's correct. I think it's a conduct that the commission can punish, even if, you know, again, using its enforcement power, even if the price is just and reasonable. On the other end, if the price is just and reasonable, if the end result of the auction is just and reasonable, then whether market manipulation occurred or not is not at that point a 206 issue. And the reason what ties this together here, and again, this gets me a bit into the fact specific part of this case, which I agree is trickier, is that you've got a reference level and a conduct threshold here. What they are is an attempt to isolate and determine what the opportunity cost is of effectively not selling into PJM. In other words, the opportunity.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I want to make sure I understand this. And then I have no further questions. What I heard you say is that even if there is proven market manipulation that is subject to fines under 222, it's occurred, and the commission imposes fines, that even though that might happen in a case, it's irrelevant that it might also have produced unjust and unreasonable rates that entitle ratepayers to refunds.
No, the opposite, Your Honor. The opposite. What I'm saying is that someone can engage in conduct that is bad conduct. Let's assume even they tried to do all sorts of terrible things. But in the end, for whatever reason, the auction produced just and reasonable rates. Maybe that person, their conduct was terrible, but it didn't affect the auction price. That would be the easiest example to cite. In that case, you would have market manipulation, but not an unjust and unreasonable rate.
But Mr. Brass, I'm having trouble imagining that. Like, isn't it also the case that a clearing price could be below the conduct threshold, but nonetheless reflect an exercise of market power or reflect market manipulation? So the question is, what is the cross-check on what? How do we know in a case that you're hypothesizing in which there is market manipulation that, we're not worried because the price, we're not worried under 206. We might be worried under 222, but we're not worried under 206 because the price is just unreasonable.
So I'm glad you asked that question, Judge Pillard. The reason is this. I guess I take exception to the assumption in the beginning of the question. I think the answer is that if the conduct threshold is working properly, and that's a question. Again, there are arguments in this case that based on the 2015 findings, the commission should have found that the conduct threshold wasn't sufficient to do its job. I understand those arguments and we can address them if we wish, but assuming for right now that the conduct threshold was adequately constructed to reflect the opportunity cost of the sales. If that's true, then the commission's initial approval of this mitigation measure holds still, which is that if the price you bid in is less than your opportunity cost, then your price is not a super competitive bid price. It is competitive. And if the bid price is competitive, then the market is going to produce clearing prices that are within the range of just and reasonable because they're where a workably competitive market would produce prices. So unless there's a problem with how the conduct threshold is designed or the reference level is designed, you can't challenge what comes out of it unless you're able to challenge the commission's theoretical, but accurate economically conclusion that opportunity cost is a real cost and that prices under opportunity cost are competitive. That's not an argument that was even made in this case. Public Citizen has never taken issue with that construct. All that they've said is that...
I'm sorry, finish your sentence.
I was just going to say, all that they've said is that it wasn't correctly set, that the provisions for how to set it, using PJM essentially as a proxy for opportunity cost, didn't work right. But they've never argued that if you had a mitigation measure based on opportunity cost and you were below that opportunity cost, it could nonetheless be unjust and unreasonable. As a matter of economics...
Couldn't it though, in theory? I mean, we shouldn't put that off the table. It very much could be, right?
I think economists might argue about it, Judge Pillard, but the commission is so far within its deference to come to the conclusion, which it came to, of course, when it approved these mitigation measures, that a price below opportunity cost is going to be just and reasonable, that it's absolutely not something this court could overturn for.
So just in common sense terms, same question that I had for prior counsel. To me, it's one thing where the whole market is, you know, all the zones are like, there's a capacity problem, right? And everybody's pushed up to the higher price, as opposed to the near zero lower prices that obtain when there's plenty of capacity. And, you know, when the reason these sort of anomalous seeming to the average econ student curves that's steeply downward sloping or vertical actually makes sense is because this is a capacity market. And if there's plenty of capacity, no need for price signals. Where there isn't enough capacity, boom, immediate need for price signal. What is odd to me here is that it doesn't seem like anybody's saying that there was an accurate price signal in what Dynegy ended up getting, or the price that was set in the auction at issue here.
Your Honor, I think there's two answers if I can for this. The first is that if it were true, and again, I understand the arguments back and forth, but if it were true that outside of this market, the price for capacity, let's say in PJM, was $150 or $160 or $170, then it's absolutely true that for Dynegy to bid it into the auction as opposed to selling it, bid in the auction at $150 as opposed to selling it outside of MISO as a whole, would not be an unjust and unreasonable bid, and would not be an unjust and unreasonable price, because the prices in PJM would be relevant to understanding that. Now, in terms of why this zone is different, and again, it's not something that the briefs go into because the question really isn't put on a tee, but it's different for a number of reasons. I mean, one of them is that several of the other zones, in fact, I think all but seven, zone seven, are zones where you have integrated operators who are both generating power, serving load, et cetera. They've got no incentive to bid a non-zero price in the auction. They're on both sides of the auction. They've got to serve load in the end. This is one of just two competitive zones in the MISO system, and it's the most competitive zone inside the MISO system. Here you do have an incentive, particularly if you're a generator like Dynegy, to bid in at least up to your going forward costs. And that's what they did. And again, the commission pointed evidence. I'm not saying the commission made a finding on it, but the commission pointed to evidence that Dynegy bid below its going forward cost. And by the way, in common sense terms, going forward cost means what the cost would be to shut down. And the theory here is that if your bid is less than the costs that you would incur basically to shut down, then your bid for capacity is going to be a competitive bid. So, you know, that's the answer to the question. I think it goes a bit deeper than again, any of the parties have gone here. And so the commission didn't make a finding on it.
Mr. Riss, what you said so far about market manipulations is actually quite helpful. But I just have one. I know I said I only didn't have any more questions, but I do have one. Take this case, for example. So in a situation where the auction produced, the auction by definition produced just and reasonable rates, correct, in this case? But the commission nonetheless undertook its own investigation of market manipulation, right?
It did.
Okay. What kind of evidence could the commission have uncovered, which would suggest that there was market manipulation, even though the auction was completely, even though the auction procedures were complied with? What would it look like? What would that be?
So, Your Honor, I'll address this in, again, two parts if I can. Yeah. The only one that really gets any real play in the public citizen complaint is economic withholding, which I do think is dealt with already in the commission complaint in paragraph 85 by the conduct threshold. Now, Your Honor mentioned a couple of other things that public citizen brought up. It brought up, for example, the initial, the acquisition that occurred in 2012.
Right.
Now, the commission approved that acquisition under its section 203 authority, and public citizens didn't seek rehearing. So that one's kind of old and stale, honestly, and beyond at least a current challenge for market manipulation. The second issue that I think Your Honor raised is how MISO makes decisions. In other words, how the stakeholders within MISO contribute to making decisions. That issue actually was litigated in the 2015 order, and the commission responds to it and says, I'm not buying it. We think that the decision-making apparatus functions satisfactorily. And again, there was no challenge to that by public citizen. I don't see a market manipulation theory that public citizen has advanced here that isn't already taken care of by all of that. Now, if your question was more theoretical,
Okay. Suppose just for hypothetical purposes, if the commission had concluded in its market manipulation analysis that there had been market manipulation, the remedy would have been a fine, correct? It wouldn't have affected the rates.
It could be disgorgement, Your Honor. There's various remedies.
Oh, it could be disgorgement.
It could be.
But it wouldn't go back and reconsider the fairness or justness of the rate, right?
Not if it believed that the tariff was
right.
Set tariff provisions were satisfactory to mitigate the exercise of power in a way that would create a super competitive prices.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. I understand.
Mr. Bress, the first argument you dealt with when you said you're going to respond to Judge Tatel's question in two parts, you said that public citizen says there was economic withholding. You said that was dealt with by the conduct threshold. And I'd love one of your crystal clear common sense explanations of that, because to my mind, that's sort of apples and oranges, that in fact, given the steep or vertical curve, that precisely one way that a provider with market power could make sure that the price is on the high side of the curve rather than the zero side is through withholding.
So, Your Honor, the type of withholding that's at issue here and that's been discussed in this case is called economic withholding. And what it means is that you bid your resources in at a super high price. Let's say you've got, let me give you an example. You've got 10 resources, 10 facilities you might be able to bid from. And for six of them, you bid them in at ungodly high prices, effectively taking them out of consideration for the auction, leaving only four facilities left to bid in at other prices. And by doing that, rendering the highest of those four, perhaps, as the clearing price in the auction. And so one of the questions here was that the commission looked at is, well, were any of the prices that were bid by Dynegy super high, if you will, in that way? And how they analyzed whether they were too high was by looking at the opportunity cost of what could they, if they didn't bid it into this auction, what could they have sold it for to PJM? And because the bids were lower than what they could have sold it to in PJM, they concluded that these bids were not economic withholding. They could have just sold elsewhere and it wouldn't have been available for the auction anyhow. But they sold to this auction at a lower price than they could have sold to PJM. Therefore, their bidding prices were perfectly competitive. That's what the commission deals with that at paragraph 85 of the initial order.
And the PJM prices have not themselves been challenged?
No. And the PJM prices, Your Honor, were, you know, in or around 150. Some of them were higher than that. And again, you know, a lot of this is discussed even in the 2015 order from the court. So that's, again, there is a question, and it's been, you know, Public Citizen has argued it, and the commission has responded to it already in this argument about, okay, but did the commission do a good enough job answering Public Citizen's argument that the conduct threshold or reference level was not sufficient, it was not set at the right place, given what the commission had found in 2015? I don't know that I have a lot that I can add to this court's consideration on that. It's absolutely true that the commission's 2015 order gave two reasons why the reference level, why the reference level was insufficient. And those two reasons were basically transmission constraints on the one hand, which existed at the time of the auction, and future changes to the PJM capacity construct, which hadn't gone into effect yet. And I agree completely that that leaves the question and left the question. Well, okay, but does the first of those reasons, was that sufficient in and of itself to render the conduct threshold insufficient or unjust and unreasonable, as the case may be? The question, I think the harder question in this case is, did Public Citizen do enough to put the commission on full notice? I agree that a generous reading of Public Citizen's rehearing petition, you can get there, but they certainly didn't raise it specifically. And if you look at that petition, they don't say there were two reasons why in 2015, the commission found the conduct threshold insufficient. They don't point that out. They don't say what's left is the question of transmission constraints. What they essentially say is, look, in 2015, you found it to be unjust and unreasonable. You have to explain why it's just and reasonable as of the time of the auction. The commission gave an answer that I will agree is general and high level. And I think the real question is this a sow's ear answer to a sow's ear argument, or is, you know, Public Citizen's argument fairly, did it fairly apprise FERC enough that it should have given a better answer? I think that's a closer question, but that's sort of the best I can do to explain how we view it.
What about, Mr. Bress, the commission's own assessment implicit in its decision not to simply dismiss in 2015 on the ground that Public Citizen had made a sow's ear argument? To me, the very fact that they said, we're only granting in part, this is super serious, we have to further look into it, and then only in 2019 said, actually, oh, you never met your burden of proof in the first place, there's something about that that does not sit well.
Your Honor, I don't think the commission, I'm not saying that the argument was a sow's ear argument in 2015, and I want to be very precise about that. I think the commission did leave open a question in its 2019 order that it had said earlier it was going to address. And that's effectively whether the transmission constraints alone would have been enough to render the conduct threshold insufficient. I agree with that. I don't think that Public Citizen's rehearing petition did a particularly good job of focusing on that issue and explaining what it was, what evidence there had been before FERC, and what FERC had to do to address it. You may end up taking FERC to task for not, you know, reading the specificity into it and answering the question, and I understand that. But certainly Public Citizen could have raised it in a way that was clear enough that it couldn't have been missed. And I think that's their duty under 313, which is, you know, is a particularly demanding exhaustion requirement. They have to have made, as this court said in ASARCO, the very argument that they raise on appeal. And I don't think, with all due respect to Public Citizen, I don't think that they made the very argument that you see in your appellate briefs. There was no reference in their rehearing petition to the transmission constraints that the commission had already found substantially limited the amount of capacity that could be exported to PJM. But I understand that's a closer call, Your Honor. And again, I don't think I've got any more I can do on that to help the court.
All right. Did you have a question?
Yeah, I do. I'm sorry.
Judge Millett, go ahead.
These transmission constraints that the commission, as you agree, acknowledged existed at the time of the 2015-16 auction. So these transmission companies on this whole premise that you would you'd have the opportunity to sell this energy to PJM rather than here. You don't disagree that those transmission constraints were important factors in calculating both the conduct threshold and the is it ILR? I can't even keep
it's a reference level, Your Honor.
Reference level, thank you. IRL, right? Initial reference level. That they were important factors in calculating those two numbers.
I think I'd phrase it differently, Your Honor. I think we may be seeing this the same way. I think the question I think you've asked is, do the commission do transmission constraints into PJM affect the reasonableness of relying on sales into PJM? And the answer is they might. The commission came to no conclusion about that right in 2015. They said there are substantial limitations, but they didn't conclude whether those limitations at the time of the auction themselves would have been enough to render this mechanism.
You talk a lot about opportunity costs, the ability to sell into PJM versus.
And how constrained was it, I guess, is the question, Your Honor. That's the question. Yes, it was limited. Was it limited enough to affect whether PJM was an adequate proxy for opportunity cost is, I guess, how I phrase it.
Well, I mean, they found that, in fact, these sales just weren't even happening.
No, they found they were happening.
At a low, very low level.
They were happening at a low enough, at a low level, Your Honor. And the question is that enough? And the commission, you know, obviously didn't address that in 2015.
All right. Thanks.
Certainly.
Taking okay. You don't disagree, Mr. Bress, that FERC needs to explain in response to Section 206 why market power, exertion of market power, market manipulation did not occur. Just as a legal matter, that the commission has a duty under 206 in response to a complaint to explain its conclusion that there was none.
No, Your Honor. I think if the commission is able to conclude that the rate was just and reasonable, it doesn't have to give any answer to was there conduct in the market that would count as market manipulation. That becomes irrelevant if the rate was just and reasonable.
But it does need to explain why the rate was just unreasonable.
It has to explain why there was a failure of proof on the 206
if that's its basis, right?
That it was unjust and unreasonable.
Okay, Mr. Bress, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Mr. Nelson, you were out of time, but you can have 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. I want to just say at the outset that if the commission had in fact made findings that the sales prices were reasonable in light of the opportunity costs of selling into PJM in paragraph 85 of its initial decision, this would be a very different case. But that isn't what it said. All it said was the tariff includes these provisions. They're designed to do this. It was complied with. It didn't say that those provisions were actually adequate to do what they were intended to do at the time. And for that reason, you know, saying that we should have focused more on a particular distinction in the rehearing request seems excessive, because the commission explained absolutely nothing about its reasons for concluding that these prices were just and reasonable, other than that the tariff provisions had been complied with. And these were tariff provisions that it itself had held prospectively unjust and unreasonable in 2015 for reasons that in the main were applicable to the 2015 auction. And it's not only the reference level that is critical here. It's also the initial clearing or the local clearing requirement, because that is the feature that made Dynegy a pivotal supplier. That's why Dynegy's bid was sufficient to set the clearing price. And had the zones and the local clearing requirement in effect not been gerrymandered at the outset, you know, then it wouldn't have mattered whether the bid was within the reference level, because the auction never would have cleared anywhere near that price. So it's not only one feature of the auction design that the commission needed to explain. It needed to explain both features that it had held unreasonable before, and it didn't explain either one in either the initial order or the rehearing order.
Mr. Nelson, can you explain exactly what relief you're seeking under which of your claims, especially the 206 claim?
Well, the initial relief would be for the commission to explain in a reasoned way whether we have stated a claim that these rates were unjust and unreasonable. Ultimately,
and when you say rates,
yes,
whether the tariff at the time of the auction was unjust and unreasonable as evidenced by unjust and unreasonable auction prices?
Well, you know, our ultimate position is that the prices are rates, but even under the commission's view and Vistra's, the auction has to have been conducted under procedures and circumstances in which participants could not exercise market power to produce a rate that would not have obtained in a competitive market. And, you know, that's the initial question the commission has to explain is why it concludes or whether it can conclude that the result was just and reasonable. You know, ultimately, what we've maintained throughout is that, you know, this can't be decided without a hearing and discovery. But, you know, as an initial matter, the commission just has to make a reasoned explanation, which so far it hasn't provided for the disposition of the complaints, which goes to both manipulation and justness and reasonableness. Right.
Okay, Ms. Perry, Mr. Bress, Mr. Nelson, thank you for your arguments. The case is submitted.